Omar Jobot Sacarduello. This is FieldPod.com coming to you from our this is the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from our studios high atop Tbilisi's wet and lovely Rustavili Avenue. Today is Thursday, the 11th of April, 2013. On this date in 1803, Talleyrand offers to sell Louisiana. In 1881, Spelman College is founded in Atlanta, Georgia. In 1919, International Labor Organization is founded. 1951, Truman relieves MacArthur of duties in Korea. The reasons having great resonance today for those who feel like checking them out. 1961, the trial of Adolf Eichmann begins in Jerusalem, and on the same day, Bob Dylan plays his first major gig in New York City. 1968, President Lyndon Johnson of Texas signs the Civil Rights Act, prohibiting discrimination in the sale, rental, and financing of housing in the United States. In 1979, Idi Amin is overthrown. In 2006, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad announces that Iran has successfully enriched uranium. On this day, Dolores Del Rio died 30 years ago, Kurt Vonnegut died 6 years ago, and on this day, Oleg Cassini, Jackie Kennedy's favorite designer, would have turned 100 years old. We are Cameron Christensen, Matthias Hooter, and me, Mark Mullen. Nothing we say can be connected with any of our employers, past, present, future, or parallel. Nothing on the forum this week other than the video of shrieking, gyrating, super vixen Gwanza Bagrationi, so nothing to chat about there. To comment or ask our views or opinions about something that happened or you want to know about, go to tbilpod.com or send us an email at tbilpod@gmail.com. Like all responsible Georgian journalists, we never source anything. My Georgian Journal and Fides Politra column this week is about regulation and does Georgia have the ability to do regulation correctly?
Does it?
I don't know, but here's what you know, first do no harm and watch out for unintended consequences. I've got great concerns, as does much of the business community, about the labor code, as listeners will know, but Georgia is incredibly unregulated. I mean, for example, cars, especially consumer regulations,
construction,
building codes. I mean, there's a bit of a regulatory mess or opportunity, depending on how you look at it here. And so just some random thoughts about
that. Well, everybody also thinks about it. A lot of regulation was actually done away with because of corruption. People were saying that regulation was just actually leading to corrupt practices. And so they abolished regulation, for example, food safety standards. They said that that was just a way for people to make money, and so rather than try and fix the problem, we'll just get rid of it.
Exactly. I mean, same thing with the Anti-Monopoly Commission under Shevard Nadze's role was to go to monopolists and say, unless you give us money, we'll investigate you. So, reasonable to get rid of them, but, you know, now we're in a different situation. And I think you can even see it in the, if you go to the Justice House, or as it's known in town, the Mushroom. They're so strict about what can and cannot be done to remove any ability for people to decide anything, that particular for foreigners doing business, where people write our names in different, alphabetic combinations,
yeah.
That it's the dealing with the paperwork is just a mess. It's obvious who we are. We have passports, their pictures, whatever else. But if there's any spelling error in any of the 47 documents required, then you have to go through changing them all because they're not allowed to have any discretion. Because the presumption is if they have any discretion whatsoever, that it will be abused and they'll take bribes and their jobs will be in jeopardy. So, giant dump of millions of pages of offshore data from the Cook Islands, Singapore, and BVI. Prime Minister Bidzina Ivanishvili was on the list of names of owners of secret offshore companies registered in one of Georgia's favorites, the British Virgin Islands. The company is named Bosherston Overseas Corporation. Between 2006 and 2009, BI was listed as director of this company, which was administered via an agent in Panama. The company was incorporated in 2006, is still active. A spokesman for BI said that he did everything according to the law. Quote, for the reporting period 2011 and 12, Prime Minister Ivanishvili had no interest in the company and therefore was under no obligation to report it in his financial declaration. Yesterday, BI said he doesn't see any problems in using offshore companies. He said, quote, that a businessman using an offshore company is common practice. If there is an error, I'll improve it. I don't rule out that there was an error, and if I am fined because of the law, it will not be a problem. Well, because I have $8 billion. No, no, no.
It's just $6 billion.
How do you know? Like, you
it's
know,
a Forbes thing.
Well, who knows where it is? Who knows I heard $8 billion, you know, but...
I don't know. Well, the problem with shell companies is, and I think as a prime minister, that is an issue of interest, that it's usually used, or in many cases used, not only to hide the people that are behind some company or assets, but to avoid tax payments, you know, to either not pay taxes that you're supposed to be, or to find loopholes in some tax code that allow you to pay less taxes. And I think there's a significant share of offshore-owned assets in Georgia, and that might be interesting also from a tax collection perspective. If you look at the foreign direct investment data, I mean, the British Virgin Islands are, I think, the number one investor in China. In Georgia, it's not that bad, but still the British Virgin Islands is like number seven, I think, in FDI in the
past
few
years. And
it's
been higher. I mean,
it has been higher,
at some point, it was, I think, even number two, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, Cyprus is also big. So there's quite a significant share of the investment that comes into Georgia is through offshore entities. Not all of that is sketchy, but, you know, I think a significant share is.
Yeah, I mean, what people will say is, well, it can be for safety, but what kind of safety? Safety from taxes. People say, well, Georgians in Russia that have made a lot of money that are told not to invest in Georgia will, you know, conceal identities through through some of these places. I'm not sure how much of that there is or how important that is. And also, Georgian officials, you know, recycling money through through places, maybe to dodge taxes or maybe not, but just to conceal identity and then reinvest it back in Georgia.
Right. And I mean,
maintain their ownership when they're not supposed to.
Right. And one thing is that usually if you avoid tax payments, it's money that is from illegal activities in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, all that's not so good. There's a book about this I haven't read called Treasure Islands.
Which is pretty good,
Yeah, you read it?
It's not bad. It's the only book on the offshore economy so far. So this is like really a gap in
knowledge.
Because for some reason people don't know that much about it. I don't, you know, I can't imagine why. on Friday, the Minister of Culture organized a roundtable discussion about the restoration of Rabati Fortress in Akhaltsikhe. Secretary General of the UNM, Vano Medabashvili, architects, historians, and experts, and representatives of the Patriarch attended the roundtable. Medabashvili argued with both the culture minister and the director of Rabati Fortress about the reconstruction, saying that the project was being dismantled.
Medabashvili is from Akhotsikhe, too.
Indeed,
right?
He is. Indeed, he is. Last week, part of Tfilpod.com's mobile investigative unit was in Akhotsikhe for the launch of Radharami's new book, In Georgian, which is, by the way, Boomerang by Michael Lewis.
Which is a great book.
A fabulous
the financial
book.
Crisis and how governments screwed up managing the crisis.
Exactly. And in different countries, he goes around to different countries and talks about that. It really is. It's a very short and very funny book in English with an excellent translation. It's available in bookstores throughout Georgia. Biblos Books. Which are all over the place for only two lotti. So any Georgian listeners, go pick that up. Anyway, the mobile team stopped in Rabati, and we can confirm that the place still exists and does not seem to be being particularly overtly disassembled. Anyway, the director said that some aspects of the reconstruction were incorrectly done and need to be fixed. Representatives of the ministry say that the corrections to Rabati will be carried out in accordance with Turkish demands to change the color of the golden dome and to remove Christian symbols from the mosque.
I think we didn't report on this last week, but actually that's what they were saying, is that there are actually like crucifixes inside the mosque.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, as happens. You know, well, hey, look what, you know, the Turks did to Hagia Sophia, you know. In exchange, they say, Turkey will include Georgia in the reconstruction process of Georgian monasteries in Turkish territory. For those who don't know, a sizable chunk of the northeastern corner of Turkey was under Georgian control for a long time. For example, the Bagrationi family, the royal family of Georgia, is actually from there. There are a lot of Georgian churches that are essentially in ruins right now, often used as stables.
And one of the big, though, contentious issues is that they're not supposed to be, well, they're not necessarily going to be renovated or reconstructed in order to be used as churches. It's just a matter of kind of physically reconstructing them, yes.
Yeah. As I've heard, I don't know, this has been much discussed. The Patriarch has been involved in this, and it's a thorny issue for between Georgian and Turkish relations. On Saturday, the potential reconstruction of Rabati Fortress was one of the main issues that Misha and Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan discussed during their official meeting in Turkey. They spoke about the possibility of altering the color of the dome. I'm not sure why that's such a big deal. And removing stones with crosses in the mosque. After the meeting, Misha said Turkey had never before requested these changes. He added that, quote, the Prime Minister of Turkey agrees with me that the dome should remain gold, end quote. On Sunday, Misha was hospitalized after a bike wreck in Antalya.
Totally unrelated.
Unrelated. Then, yes, there were crescents painted all over his body as he lie there. According to the unofficial report, Misha rode his bike into a tractor trailer. He fractured his shoulder in three places. Doctors had to give him 40 stitches. That's a lot of stitches.
Some metal apparently was implanted in his arm to keep it stable or something.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it was like fairly serious.
Later, a group of young people laid a wreath at the bicycle monument on Rose Revolution Square, formerly Republic Square, between Akhlediani or Periskaya Street and the Radisson Hotel. They said that the wreath was dedicated to the bike the president was riding when he broke his shoulders. A representative of the group, Giga Kirkvelia, told journalists that it would have been better if the bike monument had been erected in the yard of the president's administration.
The really hilarious thing about this bike monument is that it basically is just a huge bike that's sitting in the middle of the sidewalk. And then what they did was they put this glass surrounding around it so that you couldn't use the sidewalk and had to walk around this huge bike in the middle of otherwise a walking
space.
Yeah,
why did they put that glass there? I don't really... People were just shaking the bike.
No, I mean, you could still enter from one side. It wasn't like it made it so you couldn't even enter the thing. And not only that, it was only waist high. I mean, so if you really wanted to get inside, it was not very difficult.
But they're redoing the whole square, right? So well, it was like the funicular that allegedly is being built there. So
they've been redoing the whole square for like, I don't know how long.
A year.
We'll see what for a lot longer than that. If you look at where Andropov's ears was, and that whole thing is sort of in ruins. Yes. All of this proving the national movements and Mayor Gigi Ugulava's dysfunctional attitude towards pedestrians and sidewalks and inability to deal with them in a normal way. Let's hope that as the local government campaign kicks off, that that issue goes up the agenda a little bit. Yesterday, BI met with the editors-in-chief of Georgia's major television channels and newspapers. He said that during the 2008 August War, under Misha, the government acted inadequately, and much about what happened is still unclear. An investigation into what happened, BI claims, will not damage the image of the previous government, the president, or the country.
Which was a direct response to the comments that were made by Giga Bulgaria that it would.
Well, I don't really understand this. I mean, if there's a problem, and he said there's a problem, he said that they acted inadequately, but there'll be an investigation that won't damage their reputation. I mean, how... I don't understand that. But anyway, well, I mean, I think trying to figure out, you know, exactly what happened there would not be such a bad idea. Certainly the UN didn't do much of a job there.
You mean the EU? Well, was it a UN report?
I think it was a UN report with Tagliani.
Earlier,
Justice Minister Teo Tsoulikiani stated that the investigation into the August 2008 war was Georgia's international obligation since the country is a party to the Rome Statute. She does not rule out interrogating Misha, as she rubbed her hands together and cackled. At the conference, BI said that smoking will be banned in more public spaces and that restrictions on adolescents drinking in restaurants will become stricter. He asked that people... treat the stricter controls with understanding. I wonder if they'll work on drinking in birjas by adolescents as well.
Oh, I think that would cause a new revolution.
Yeah, exactly. That might be like trying to institute property tax, which didn't really go over so well.
I actually, you know, it's funny, I guess, because I no longer, maybe if the level of place that I go to now is different from a couple when I first came to Georgia, but I can remember leaving a place once because there were like these 14-year-olds or I don't even know, 13, who looked like they were getting drunk for the first time. And I was like, this is really enjoyable for me to be like eating dinner and watching these kids, you know, like smoke like for the first time in in public and, you know, get served alcohol in a restaurant.
So they kept themselves, you know, they preserved themselves smoking till 13. They waited until they were 13. That's just great, you know. Yeah, I mean, certainly the smoking. I mean, I think it's time for Georgia. Look, their seatbelt laws, Georgia's, you know, really becoming a, you know, a significantly more developed country. And, you know, grown-up countries these days do not allow smoking in indoors. I mean, it seems a little bit strange to practically anyone coming in here looking at the, you know, in general, fairly, you know, glorious interiors of restaurants here and things like that, and having everybody smoking there. It just doesn't sort of seem right. And there are clear public health benefits to banning smoking inside.
And people probably don't, I mean, if you're not a smoker, you wouldn't know how cheap cigarettes are here, which is, they're 2 lari 50 or something, or 3 lari. I mean, this is what, like a buck 80?
Yeah, they are incredibly cheap. And they, I mean, I think they'd like to excise them more, but smuggling in through, particularly through South Ossetia, is such an issue that the more expensive they get, there'd just be more and more unexcised cigarettes around. B.I. spoke about the church, interestingly, and said that no matter how hard we try to hide it, we know that there are problems with the church. This is normal for society and should not be treated as a taboo topic. He states that his attitude towards the church...
No, he said that basically, he said, you know, the church is a big, big culture, a part of the Georgian culture, and so it's very important, but that his personal relationship with the church and how religious he is, that's not an issue of public interest, basically. Basically, he said what he said before he started really campaigning, that he's, I think, agnostic or atheist. And then during the campaign, he you know, didn't really bring that issue up.
But he said that the church must be independent. I mean, he did not, didn't he say that specifically in his comments?
Yeah, and he also said that they're still going to continue to receive their, you know, 250 million lari.
No, 25 million of direct budget funds.
25.
And then additional money. But, yeah. But he said, you know, like, yeah, the church, we're not going to pick a fight with the church. They must be independent. They get the money. But he said, you know, he hinted that he is not very religious.
We will do our best to find the exact quote and post that on the forum.
What was the reason for that discussion, though? I mean, what preempted this?
I think it was a press conference and people asked him questions.
Oh, okay.
He also commented on UNM's planned protest on April 19th that's much talked about, saying that they are going to give money to citizens to protest. What the plans are there, you know, there's supposedly going to be some big surprise. Fano's been sort of plugging that. You know, what that surprise will be, you know, who knows whether that'll be some political movements here and there. But,
or Guanza Bagrationi.
Or Guanza Bagrationi as the presidential candidate for UNM.
That's kind of a traditional thing for an opposition to say, right? We're going to organize this big protest in 2 months, and then you will see something big will happen, and we will tell you when it happens, and then it never happens. I mean, that was like Burjanadze's thing over the past year. She always said, something big will happen, you will see.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I think there are a lot of different, you know, possibilities. I'd be interested to see, you know, if Alasania is somehow involved. I don't know what could happen there. Or maybe
they present a presidential candidate or something like that. I don't know.
I don't know. I think word on the street is that this is going to be kind of the nail in Mirabishvili's coffin, where he realizes basically how little support he has.
You know, I don't know. There's a lot of different streets. You know, your street's a little different to my street. I think there might be, you know, there might be a lot of people there. It depends on how you define a lot of people. You know, no matter how many people are there, the government will say, you know, not very many, and this shows that they're not,
right.
You know, I mean, important. The national movement will say tons, and this shows that we're, you know, an important force.
Right, but they won't be compared to the last big protest, which was Bidzina's rallies in the fall. That was a lot of people.
Well, I mean, let's see. I don't know how many, you know, how many were actually at that protest, but it was a lot. You know, this UNM, we'll have to check it out. I mean, there's two different things. There's how many people show up, and I think it's a little bit different. You know, difficult to say how many people will indicate that it is important. You know, certainly over 50,000 will be something.
Right.
But also what announcement is made and whether there are any wranglings related to leadership in the national movement or presidential candidates or whatever else.
And the official theme of the protest was like for a Western foreign policy, right? Which is like not the issue that usually gets people really excited.
Right. Well, you know, maybe UNM supporters, you know.
Maybe.
Well, BI also said
unlike communists like you. Oops.
he was looking at Matthias there. BI has said also that he already knows who he wants to have as his presidential candidate, and that he's going to probably announce it in May, but that he has to nonetheless discuss it with other people, which I think is just a great negotiation tactic. You know, so like I already know who I want, but you know, maybe I'll just run it past a couple people, you know, first, and you know.
Well, the name that everyone has been talking about for the last week or two is Armaz Akhlediani, which. I don't know. You know, that would be, he's sort of, you know, been hanging around for a long time at the School of Politology, you know, not a bad guy, but, I don't know. I don't know what the idea behind that would be. You know, it's sort of like, it's like the Iranian presidential candidates, you know, it's like one person is deciding and it's sort of, you know, it's kind of, there's a sort of a beauty parade going on right now.
Only thing is, I'm going to just go ahead and reveal my ignorance here, but is there not some sort of limitation on, campaigning here? So, I mean, if they decide that they're going to announce their presidential candidate, let's say, I don't know, in, you know, next week or in May, I mean, official campaigning
is 2 months before the election.
Right,
but that's going to be changed.
But I'm guessing
probably,
that Channel 9 will be, you know, all of a sudden decide to, you know, cover a lot of news stories, you know.
Yeah, you can't spend money really before that, but you can still spend money before that.
Right, well, okay, so it's just unenforceable kind of.
On Monday, Kvitis Politra published an interview with Otsneba Member of Parliament Mamuka Adashidze, in which he said that there's a group of about 60 people in the Interior Ministry who are complicit in the previous government's crimes. A majority of them, Adashidze say, are still at their posts. Their aim is to ensure that the past crimes do not resurface by hampering investigations. Adashidze asserted that a similar group exists at the prosecutor's office, and they cooperate. He said that it took Interior Minister Irakli Kharibashvili some time to orient himself and to make appropriate decisions. He claimed that 2 weeks ago, Kharibashvili sacked nearly all of the newly appointed police chiefs because they were under the influence of this group. He said that this has not been publicized yet and that, quote, many high-ranking officials at the Interior Ministry will lose their jobs. They will probably sack or demote several high-ranking officials who are well-known to the public, end quote. We'll see. This whole thing was quite alarmist, you know, and a little paranoid, but you know, maybe these things are going on, at least in terms of the firings.
Well, did you also see the BI comment that he said, you know, he's not going to change the cabinet of ministers, but there are two or three ministers that, you know, kind of have problems?
They shall be remained unnamed.
Just two or three.
It's like Saddam walking through the parliament with a gun saying, one of you has betrayed me. What? Strange. On Tuesday, Georgia commemorated the victims of the April 9th massacre. To those who don't know, on April 9th, 1989, the Soviet Army dispersed a peaceful group of Georgian demonstrators with tear gas and shovels. 21 people died. Many were injured. To commemorate the victims, the stairs to the former building of parliament and future building of parliament are covered with flowers, which is where the sort of center of the activity was. BI, Irakli Alasania, Kharibashvili, Kaladze, and U.S. Ambassador Norland and other representatives stopped by and showed tribute to the memory of those killed. On Monday, the Minister of Education, Georgi Margvelashvili, stated that over 2,000 public schools and 650,000 primary and secondary students will receive textbooks free of charge for the 2013-2014 school year. The decision of the ministry was followed by criticism from the printing houses, which assert that there are 2 million school books stored at the publisher's warehouses. Instead of buying them, the ministry is printing lots of new ones and urging them to do so at a low price. For those who don't know, textbook printing in Georgia has always been a corrupt and badly handled issue, and the quality of many of the books is not good, content and physical quality of them. I mean, there are a lot of allegations against Shashkin's ministry for corruption in textbooks, and it's been a big mess for forever.
I can remember many of my friends who had children were always talking about trying to find the school books even. Yeah. Like sometimes that you just couldn't even locate them.
Oh, exactly. We had, I mean, you know, this year for my kids, you know, well into the school year tracking around and ended up going from office to office and finally ended up being sent to
PSP pharmacy.
Yeah, exactly. A very large pharmacy, and told that if we get a, you know, an expensive loyalty card, they'll toss in a textbook. pretty unbelievable.
Wow.
On Tuesday, Vano Medvedevsky urged the, speaking of pharmaceuticals, urged the authorities to stop the mass detention and interrogation of UNM activists during the midterm electoral campaign for parliamentary vacancies. Medvedevsky alleges that over 2,000 activists have been interrogated. He says that he will personally send a letter to each of the 2,000 who underwent interrogation to express solidarity, support, gratitude, and call on them to continue serving the Georgian state. According to Justice Minister Teo Tsoulikiani, the previous government was planning to keep additional information on ID cards, electronic chips. Soon she will reveal video evidence of this. Tsoulikiani said that the current electronic chip contains the information that's written on the ID card itself, plus the address of the holder. She will speak to the Holy Synod of the Georgian Orthodox Church and listen to their concerns about putting personal information on the chip. What do we think about discussing this with the church? I mean, on the one hand, it could help with uptake, which has been a problem in the past. On the other hand, it's not such a great precedent.
Well, the whole discussion about the ID card was never about privacy issues or personal data protection. The church said that the chip that is printed on the card had like a pattern on it that was the face of the devil.
And did the patriarch say this, or just like...
No, the patriarch at some point, after a month of everybody saying that, he said, well, I hereby kind of say that this is not the devil on the card. But, like, a lot of high-ranking priests were talking about this, and a lot of people were upset about this. Kind of about the ID card because of that.
So it makes some sense to to check it out with them and just sort of cool things down. I mean, on the other hand...
It makes sense to talk about private data and, you know, protecting that data of citizens.
What is that? I don't understand what you mean. I've never heard of that.
I know. Well, the government is now... the government is currently creating...
Hoovering all of our personal data from, the phone servers.
Yes, yes. But they are also finally looking for somebody to become a data ombudsman who hopefully will kind of raise awareness about privacy and also kind of watch what companies and the government does with people's personal data.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I also don't understand, why does she announce that she has this information and then soon she's going to reveal video evidence of this? That's
in accordance with Georgian traditions. That's I have in my hand information,
so,
and it will be revealed on YouTube.
So annoying.
Tsoulikiani stated that the financial institutions, banks, and private mortgage holders will have stricter regulations. She will propose particular legal initiatives in the near future. According to Justice Ministry data, Georgian citizens have signed over 200,000 agreements with private mortgage holders in Georgia. An example is that in microfinance organizations, they can now not charge more than a 2% penalty for borrowers who want to refinance. This is the same rate as banks. And it's actually an improvement. We'll get rid of some of the more predatory lenders. But it was done completely overnight and by the National Bank, indicating less than complete independence of the National Bank, at least in regulatory matters.
And maybe it's appropriate to say that you have shares in a microfinance institution.
Oh, Mr. Transparency here. Yes, indeed. I know that because I do have shares in Geo Capital.
Actually,
gives us the number.
Matthias knows that because he works at the hardest working NGO.
Because he works at the hardest working NGO in Georgia, Transparency International Georgia, of which I have a loose affiliation. So, on Saturday, about 60 recruits walked out of a training facility in Cajeti and went home. The recruits said that they were treated improperly, citing having to clean toilets. What?
Later, a man cleaning a toilet?
Unbelievable. Later, the Ministry of Defense released a statement that the recruits refused to obey army regulations, and the leadership decided to dismiss them from the base.
Wait, but if a recruit... I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, I don't really understand what this means.
Like, most countries.
You know, I'm not going to clean the toilets because that's, you know, not fair. And they say, okay, go home? Like, is that, I don't know.
We didn't want you here anyway.
Yeah, I don't, I'd be interested to get a little bit of background on that. New faction, the Independent Democrats, was formed at the Tbilisi City Assembly. All three members of the new faction were former UNM members.
Is that a hint that there's kind of maybe a more systematic split in the party?
I don't know. You know, as the Tbilisi soccer bulo goes, so goes the nation. You know, I don't know. Yikes.
So it's only three now for a faction.
In the soccer bulo, in 26.
On Friday, protesters sealed majoritarian MP Gubaz Sanakidze's office with adhesive tape. In Kutaisi City Hall. According to Shalva Kamladze, one of the protesters, Sanakidze has not shown up at the office since the October elections. He said Sanakidze is obliged to meet the residents of Kutaisi once every 3 weeks, according to the law, but he's not met with citizens at all. Sanakidze claimed that it was a UNM provocated adhesive tape crisis.
But he's a parliamentarian, and yet he has an office in City Hall. This is what we're understanding from this. And then also, I'd like to point out, if he's a parliamentarian, you know, this is something that I feel like a broken record on, but people don't have constituencies. Parliamentarians don't have their own constituencies. They may get elected in two different ways, but like their constituency is the entire country.
Well, if you're a parliamentarian candidate, it's the entire population.
It's not your constituency.
In the United States, if you're a senator from Texas, you help people out from Texas.
Right. No, but that's because we have a different system in the United States.
If you're a majoritarian MP, it's the same as being a member of Congress or a senator. I mean, it's the same situation. You have a specific geographical group in which you're supposed to work on it. For example, lots of American NGOs do constituent work, you know, where they encourage members to do that. You obviously want to vote for the good of the nation, but you have responsibility to vote for the good of your constituency as well. Now,
but that's what I'm saying is the constituency for any kind of parliamentarian in Georgia, regardless of the way that they were elected, is the entire population of Georgia.
No, not really so much. I mean, in the sense that they have responsibility for the whole country, as they do in any legislature. But, I mean, the situation for half of the members of Parliament of Georgia is the same as it is for the entirely majoritarian U.S. Congress. Ex-Defense and Internal Affairs Minister Bacho Akhalaya was transferred back to prison number 9 from Goldani prison number 8. He's been allegedly transferred to Goldani because of repair work.
And he has also alleged a couple of weeks ago that he has never really been questioned by the prosecutor's office. And I'm not sure if they have addressed that. But
they're busy trying to find out if they have any evidence for him to be held.
Well, you would hope that they have something.
One would hope. Irakli Kakabadze, writer and peace activist, wrote on his Facebook page that Turkish businessman Ahmet Çalık, owner of Forbes Turkey, has given a bunch of money to Misha and is going to put $100 million into UNM's revival.
I think that can maybe be classified as rumor and wild speculation.
Absolutely. Irakli Kakabadze, you know, sometimes has accurate rumor and wild speculation. Right. But yes, it is completely rumor and wild speculation.
But he also has political asylum in the United States, doesn't he?
Political asylum?
I think so. I mean,
well, he shows up here. I don't know whether...
Does he come here? Okay.
Yeah. So, a group of farmers in the village of Ditsi near South Ossetia are protesting the sale of 140 hectares of land to investors from India and refuse to let them cultivate it. Some locals argue that not only is it dangerous to sell land so close to the occupied territory to foreigners, but that doing so is, and I quote, equal to genocide. Locals say that they learned of the sale only last Wednesday when the Indians began working on the plots. They say they will continue not to allow them to work until there is a court decision on the matter.
And I think there was a court decision on the general matter of allowing foreigners to buy agricultural land by the Constitutional Court, which last year established that foreigners should be allowed to buy land here. And I think this piece of land was even sold by the government to these investors.
Yeah, that's a complicated issue. I mean, there's the land titling the precise boundary of land is complicated, and frankly, the government owns a whole bunch of land that people have been grazing on forever, that now a lot of people, including foreigners, whether, you know, Afrikaans speakers from South Africa or Indians or whoever else, want to begin farming. And because they're foreigners and because the public, the people around there have been grazing on them for, you know, on that area for a long time, and because at times the boundaries are not, you know, they're pretty well understood, but they're not very precisely understood, things can get a little bit complicated. It will be important to see how enthusiastic the government is about enforcing agricultural property rights for foreigners. On the 1st of April, Abkhaz President Ankvab held a meeting about the condition of historical and cultural monuments in Abkhazia. He said the state has an opportunity to restore them on a large scale, probably related to the Olympics. He specifically mentioned the monuments of Bediskai, Moskovsky, the Ilyorsky temples, and also of the roof in the Lichnensky temple. The Foreign Ministry of Abkhazia released a statement expressing regret over the exclusion of Abkhazia from a list of participants in a children's festival in Turkey, allegedly because of Tbilisi interference. The festival is scheduled for April 23rd. As reported last week, but with a little bit more detail, Sony plans to open an Academy of Visual Arts in Georgia. Representatives of the company met with BI, Economy Minister Georgi Kvitikashvili, and Education Minister Georgi Margvelashvili. On Sunday, a verbal confrontation took place in front of the state chancellery between demonstrators in favor of and opposed to abortion. Right to Lifers demanded that abortion be criminalized with a legislative initiative. Supporters of women's rights, of women's right to choose, said that the criminalization was wrong because women should make their own decisions.
And people should know that abortion actually, I think Georgia had one of the highest rates of abortion in the entire former Soviet Union, if not in
the world. Yeah.
It's not that high compared to the former Soviet Union, but the former Soviet Union is way higher than practically everywhere else in the world. I think the average Georgian woman, and I think this is probably quite old, maybe 6 or 8 years, but the average woman had 4 abortions at some point in the fairly recent past. Stephen Jones has written a new article called Democracy in Georgia, Di Capo. In it, he argues that the negative press about the new government's supposed political persecution is, quote, a repetition of misinformed Western observers who so often get Georgia wrong, end quote. The article has a bunch of great quotes like this one, quote, a second feature which accentuated Georgia's regular slide into authoritarianism was the unbridgeable chasm between governed and governors. This is not just a Soviet legacy. It was perpetrated after 2003 by self-proclaimed neophytes insistent on the ideological and economic reconstruction of society along Western lines, end quote. Despite giving Misha some credit, Jones refers to Misha's rule as, quote, a neoliberal fancy, end quote. He's British. that fetishized FDI, stimulated high-level corruption, and ultimately did little to improve the lives of most Georgians. Jones notes the repetition of Gamzahordia Shevardnadze and Saakashvili, each of whom came to power saying that they would reverse the democratic shortcomings of their predecessors, only to be booted out by the next. Jones argues that the historical lack of separation between economic and political power, the inability to establish an independent judiciary, and the tendency to centralize are what have led to this. The question is whether Georgian Dream will reverse the trend. He then explores how Georgian Dream has taken real steps to solve these problems, though it's still not clear what the results will be. He's a very knowledgeable guy, particularly on Georgia's recent history. He has written a couple of great books, one just released about Georgia in the last 100-odd years, and highly recommend reading him if you have the chance. In Georgia's Bumpy Transition, How the EU Can Help, Yana Kobzova from the European Council on Foreign Relations, a pan-European think tank, and by the way, the best people to pay attention to related to EU and greater Europe matters, argues that the EU should, one, send experts to match the financial assistance that it already gives, and that's starting to happen. Two, be critical of the government when necessary based on nonpartisan evaluation of developments. Three, support the economy, especially shorter-term growth-oriented projects. Kobzova argues that failing to improve living standards may lead to the government undermining Georgia's fragile democratic institutions in search of popularity. A failure for coexistence and developing democratic political culture could lead to alienating Georgia's Western allies. PayPal is finally allowing Georgians to use its services. Just saw yesterday that was all over Facebook. The Ministry of Economy has been negotiating this for years. PayPal's director of Central and Eastern Europe will make the official announcement in Tbilisi on April 15th.
What had been the problem always before?
They did not allow Georgian bank accounts to transfer money to PayPal, which is what you need to charge your PayPal account, and you can only do that through bank transfers.
What was the reasoning behind it?
I think it was that Georgia was small and they didn't really care very much. There's also
Laundering concerns.
Money laundering, but I think it was like, you know, how serious are the banks and are they real banks and, you know, and that sort of thing. I know Kacha Benukidze had worked quite hard on that, but that's a great
You could finally allow there to be kind of an online economy in Georgia with people selling stuff online and
donations. If I understand correctly, you can pay from Georgia, but you can't receive money into Georgia. I think. I don't know whether they're working on that or that's a second stage or whatever else. Maybe we'll find out in the announcement. But I think it's just one-sided. But there's now a relationship with PayPal, so that's great. And that's particularly important for Georgians who want to get stuff abroad. The government is increasing fees that mineral water companies pay to use natural resources. Borjomi and Nabiglavi stated that this decision will negatively affect their competitiveness and exporting ability, and it will increase prices. According to the amendments, the fee will be increased from 10 lari to 30 lari per cubic meter for Borjomi and from 6 lari to 18 lari for Saidime and Nabiglavi. A Facebook group called Housing for All has posted photos of Tbilisi Botanical Garden where Bera, B.I.'s son, is supposedly building a studio. According to the webpage, because of the building, a large cliff was ruined and many fir trees were cut down. Now, because of Bera's studio, in order to get into town, locals have to walk through a tunnel which doesn't have a sidewalk. And if you're lucky, a car won't hit you. We'll post that video. Tbilisi International Airport has increased the number of flights for the summer season, which will last until October 28th. Italian airline Alitalia has decided to carry 4 weekly flights between Rome and Tbilisi. Czech Airlines will be rising the number of flights from Prague to 3 times a week.
It used to be every day almost.
Prague?
Yeah, no?
Well, I think they had a similar flight, but they had different airlines that were doing it. It was, you know, AirZena, maybe Czech Airlines. And for the first time, there will be direct flights to Barcelona, Stockholm, and Varna via Fly Georgia. There actually were Barcelona flights for a brief time, but it didn't work out so well. I don't think there have ever been direct Stockholm flights.
And Israeli air company is also coming into the Georgian market.
To flights to Ben Gurion, or?
I have no idea.
Probably.
Cool.
It's like, is rare or something.
Maybe
like
charter
that.
Flights.
Yeah. Well, but hey, the more the merrier. I mean, and these new charters, especially Pegasus, have really dropped the prices. A study by analysis and consulting team, not really sure who they are, indicate that 53% of Tbilisi residents think that finding a job in the country is impossible without knowing someone. 29% say that that's completely true, while 24% say it's generally the case. The research was done in February by surveying 426 adults in Tbilisi. LLC Ornament won a 5 million lari tender to renovate the old parliament building. Another 5 million lari contract to redo the inside of meeting rooms is currently tendered. All works are supposed to be finished by mid-October. Any listeners who are interested should go to the tender site that TI monitors closely. Now for a bit about poverty in Georgia from UNICEF. Since 2005, the government of Georgia has not published absolute poverty indicators, but as calculated by Georgian UNICEF country team, the share of the population living below the subsistence minimum in 2009 was 42.41.2%. Welfare monitoring survey carried out by UNICEF during May 2009, besides the relative poverty threshold, another poverty threshold equivalent was used, which is $2.5 a day. According to that, also 41.5% of Georgian households, or 44.8% of the population, were poor.
Yeah, $2.5 a day is not that much money in Georgia.
Yeah, indeed. The IMF published a letter to the Georgian government, a letter that the Georgian government wrote them in March. The letter is signed by BI, Finance Minister Khaduri, and Governor of the Central Bank, Georgi Kadagidze. They say that they are going to promote macroeconomic stability, accountability, and geographically diverse job creation, and then perhaps most importantly, transparency about all of this, which is something that could easily... I mean, the government before said that they were going to do all those other things. Transparency is the most important, and the one that perhaps they're already beginning to work on a little bit. Also on their list, undertaking reforms to strengthen the institutional framework of the Partnership Fund, publishing accounts of LEPLs every 6 months. This is important.
That would be great.
It would be really great. This is important because LEPLs, or legal entities of public law, are these strange entities not well cataloged that are sort of these quasi-governmental private things.
They're kind of independent government entities, but a lot of their income they have to generate themselves through fees or selling something. So they're usually not directly funded by the budget.
But they're not. There's a lot of different ways to set them up, and it's sort of their setup was quite decentralized. And frankly, nobody really knew how many of them there were. There was no sort of central reporting authority. Here's some interesting comments about the banking sector. Quote: "While in the past we have relied mainly on moral suasion, we are now taking a more formal approach to discouraging non-resident deposits. By June 2013, we will introduce a transitory liquid ratio for non-resident deposits, which will take effect until the full LCR comes into force. Provided non-resident deposits are no more than 10% of total deposits, in which case we believe they can be a useful source of diversified funding, they will face the standard 30% liquidity requirements. For each percentage point above the 10% threshold, the liquidity requirement for non-resident deposits will increase by the same amount. Thus, if non-resident deposits make up 15% of total deposits, then the total non-resident deposits will face a liquidity requirement of 35%. At the same time, the National Bank of Georgia will continue to work on distinguishing non-resident depositors with no interest in the country from non-residents who have close economic links to Georgia, employees of international organizations and embassies, diaspora foreign companies with business relations in Georgia, etc. While hard to calculate precisely, our current estimate suggests the share of NRDs of people with no other interest in the country is less than half of the total reported NRDs. This will help us refine our supervisory measures." End quote. Who is this directed at? My guess is it's Iranians, although I haven't really heard anything about this. But essentially what they're saying is they're going to make it quite difficult for a small independent bank to have a very large number of non-resident deposits.
But I don't understand what the benefit for Georgia is. So if a Georgian bank, you know, and they offer very high interests on savings accounts, I mean, you can get up to 10% and more on saving accounts here. So if foreigners put their money into these saving accounts and Georgian banks can lend that to people and businesses in Georgia, that would bring down lending rates, right? And that would benefit the economy. So if the banks ensure that this is not a way for people to launder money, I don't understand what the problem is if foreigners invest in
the problem here, is not at all for foreigners. I think the problem is suitcases of cash coming from Iran, which is what people are worried about because of visa-free travel. There's a lot of, you know, there are discussions about that. I've heard a lot of different things. I've heard that, you know, that the U.S. Is worried about this. I've heard that the U.S. is not worried about this and feel that the Georgian-Iranian relationship is a good thing for Iranians to be able to see what a, you know, modern Western capitalist democracy, you know, should look like.
And if it's normal Iranians, okay, that's
great.
That's a result of the sanctions. I mean, that's what the sanctions are supposed to do.
But
if it's public officials...
But it's not that easy to check. I mean, somebody shows up and how do you do the background check? And certainly with the Office of Foreign Asset Control, or OFAC, The requirements are that the burden of proof is on whoever's doing business with the Iranians. So essentially you can't, it kind of forces you to, you know, be nervous about doing business with Iranians, unfortunately. So let's hope that a deal is done soon. But the potential upside for Georgia, the macroeconomic stimulus upside, is enormous. So, but anyway, it's just, it's interesting to see that this is made manifest in a letter to the IMF. In parliamentary news this week, on Saturday, the parliament approved amendments to the Criminal Procedures Code, which deprived the accused the right to choose who should consider the case, a judge or jury. These amendments will not be applied to former high-ranking officials, including Bashwa Khalaya. Parliament also approved amendments to the Law and Common Law Courts, which concerns the formation of the High Council of Justice. Currently, parliament's on vacation. We will post the exact changes in the Law on Common Courts, which has to do with how the Council of Justice is appointed. But this is, we talked about this before, but this was a negotiation between the head of the Supreme Court, Kote Kubalashvili, and Bidzini Ivanishvili, and it's a good plan. It's going to preserve the independence of the judiciary, and it's not going to lead to wholesale reappointment of judges. But at the same time does change somewhat the way in which judges are overseen. This week, the most posted and watched meme around was Margaret Thatcher's visit to Tbilisi in 1987. Britain's former MP Margaret Thatcher, who passed away on Monday, visited the Soviet Union. She walked through districts of old Tbilisi, decorated the grave of the unknown soldier in Vake Park with flowers, and was entertained by a 15-minute show of young dancers at the wedding house. The Prime Minister of the UK was hosted at the local festival by First Secretary of the Georgian Communist Party, fondly remembered Jumbur Patiashvili, who actually ran against Shevardnadze for president in 2000, by the way, for those of us who were floating around back then. The chairman of the government of, and also she was escorted around by chairman of the government of the Soviet Republic of Georgia, Otar Cherkesia. For this week's GeoCapital number, the GeoCapital staff dug deep into the annals of Georgia's foreign trade to pay tribute to Radharami, whose books many of GeoCapital's staff enjoy. The number is 21.5 million, which is the dollar value of products imported into Georgia in 2012 under the HS code 4901, which is the classification for, quote, printed books, brochures, leaflets, and similar printed materials, end quote. This number has quadrupled over the last 4 years and is up from a measly $900,000 in 2000. On the export side, the story is quite different. Last year, Georgia exported only $66,500 worth of printed material, this down from a spike of $1.22 million in 2006. I might add that all of Radharami's books are printed domestically in Georgia. This week's English language movie at the Rustaveli Movie Theater across from Parliament is Saturday, April 13th, The Croods in 3D at 8 p.m. Tickets are 10 Lottie and 50 Tetri. Kolga movies are tomorrow, Friday, In the House, 2012. Saturday, April 13th, Me and You from 2012. You know anything about these movies?
No.
Never heard of them. All movies start at 8 p.m. at Dom Kino across from Rustaveli Metro and McDonald's. Tickets are 7 Lottie. Geo Fashion is organizing the 8th Tbilisi Fashion Week, which will take place April 23rd to 26th. During the four-day event, up to 20 designers will present their autumn-winter collections. Already? I don't really know how that works, so I guess. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email is tpeelpod@gmail.com. Or post to the forum on our website, www.tpeelpod.com. And going straight out to Atlanta, Georgia, from 1971, this is Bill Withers with Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home anytime she goes away. And I know, I know, I know, I know. Sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home.